They say confession is the first step on the journey home to the God who waits and longs to forgive and to liberate us. Do you remember that strange and wonderful thing that happened in South Africa? You're in a courtroom, and people who did bad things during the apartheid regime in South Africa are fessing up, coming clean about those bad things, spying on colleagues who were thought to be subversives, lying and intimidation against enemies of the state, brutality and violence towards those critical of the government of the day. The success of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission recognises that there can be no justice, there will be no reconciliation without confession, until the facts are on the table, until the truth is out. Reality requires the truth, and the truth sometimes requires confession. There is a sound biblical principle at work in this, and there is sound human psychology in operation. We need to confess if we are to have freedom from the chains of the past. This is the crucial dynamic that releases us from the burden of our yesterdays in order to enjoy the liberty of our tomorrows. The psalmist David wrote a song about it, and he had plenty to confess: moral failure, deception, adultery, the shameful betrayal of a brother in arms, and what boiled down to murder of his mistress's husband. So, plenty to confess. The harsh truth of these terrible things lay heavy on his soul. He could keep up appearances, but all the while the rotting corpse of his failures lay putrid in his heart. And while he lived that lie, hid those ugly truths, true happiness was denied him, for as long as he himself was in denial. He could bury it deep, really deep. He could build walls and barriers and put on a damn good show and do whatever it took to keep the terrible truth at bay, but it was always there. They never left him. Deep down, he knew. This was who he was. A liar, a cheat, a killer. Afraid of being found out. Afraid of a real encounter with the God he kept increasingly at arm's length. He could carry on with the religious charade, but he had to avoid real connection, real prayer, real exposure. So avoid, deny, pretend. These are not the ingredients of a happy life. The effect was to rob him of the fundamental relationship that was at the core of his true character. He admits it. It made him ill at ease. It made him ill. When I did not confess my sin, he writes, I was worn out from crying all day long. My strength was completely drained. We can't all keep up the act for a long, long time. We build a solid reputation. We bury the guilt deeper and deeper. But it never goes away. In our hearts, we know about it. In our hearts, we know that God knows about it. And that's all that's needed to take away our peace of mind, our true serenity of spirit. And it explains that desire to make sure that God is kept at a safe distance from where we really are, who we truly are. Now, you'll probably have noticed, if you come to church a lot, we think about these things. We address these realities. A bit of self-examination before the light of God's truth is part of what we do. And that happens for a reason. The reason is the absolute need to keep it real. Introduce dissembling, pretense, masquerading as something we're not. Bring half-truths into the business of worship and you wreck it. It deserves honesty. Indeed, it requires it with an unshakable rigour. At any point, it's relevant to introduce the phrase, "Who are you trying to kid?" into our worship experience. For worship depends on the truth for its reality. Not goodness, but truth is a requirement. Not perfection, but reality is the crucial ingredient if worship is to be worship. The worst sinner in the world can worship God. The biggest hypocrite, the man or woman who pretends to a righteousness which doesn't exist, will never get close to God, can never, not as long as they cling to their illusion of a holiness they don't actually possess. Not when their life is littered with unresolved conflicts and sins they will not own. Now, confession is not about beating ourselves up about what useless cases we are. It's about letting God into the dark corners to bring his light. It's acknowledging the need in order to get the help. It's admitting something is broken so that God can fix it. But if we refuse to go there, prefer to believe our own deluded propaganda about ourselves, then we shut the door on the possibility of healing and new beginnings. We miss the opportunity to be made new. Men in general are terrible when it comes to going to the doctor about stuff, have you noticed? They're reluctant to admit to medical problems. But of course, the longer the delay, the more obdurate the denial, the greater the damage that can be done. And when we stubbornly shut our eyes and our hearts to the truth about ourselves, when we choose the myth that has no substance in reality, then comes trouble. Confession is about realism, authentic religion, and that has to be better than maintaining the illusion, feeding the lie. David is very specific about how bottling up the truth affected him. It had physical consequences, it made him uptight, and robbed him of his ability to be at peace with himself. It cheated him of his capacity for happiness. But when he confessed his sin, looked in the mirror of truth, and accepted the harsh but fair verdict he found there, it made a new man of him. It was like a huge burden had been lifted from his shoulders. When I was a kid, I had an illustrated Pilgrim's Progress, and one of the pictures in it was Pilgrim kneeling at the cross of Jesus, and his burden of guilt and shame and sin was on his back, held there by leather straps. And as he kneels there at the cross of Christ, it snaps off his shoulders and rolls down the hill into the oblivion of God's grace and forgiveness. What an image. What a picture. What a truth. This is the great irony of the whole confession thing. It's not as if God doesn't know everything about us already anyway. There are no shock revelations or surprises, but until we own who we are and what we have done or said, the healing grace of God can't get through the door. We've barred and barricaded it in our desire to protect our self-image for fear of exposure or discovery. And the blessing and deliverance and forgiveness that are there for us just can't get in to cascade over our soul and wash us clean. Because we refuse to allow that. We refuse to accept that it's for people like us, with our mistakes, our shame, our regrets, our destructive words, our failures of nerve, the bad stuff we've done or thought. We need to get behind the screen and strip away our illusions and be willing to stand shivering and naked before our God. I suppose it's all about what level we want to operate on. What degree of intimacy or sharing do we freely choose for our relationships, in particular for our relationship with God? We might think that stark honesty is an intimacy too far, a high-risk strategy. What would this friend or that think of us? What would God's response be to our tentative and painful honesty about the anger that flared up in us, the miserable, shameful silence we kept when a friend was being bad-mouthed, the indifference we demonstrated to the needy person whose need reached out to us? The holding back on commitment that started as a knee-jerk response and then became a pattern and finally a deliberate choice. Big sins, little sins, huge betrayals and tiny derelictions, little lies and destructive, joyful libels. Can this be me? Is this us? We don't want any of it to be true, yet we know. We know the tendencies, the shallow transactions. We know how painful and disturbing and disillusioning confessing to any of this is. Confession hurts because it's a warts and all job, or it's not worth doing. And confession is a continual process because, like it or not, our sinful nature makes thoughtless, ego-riddled people of us all constantly, daily. So without demeaning our dignity as children of God, the truth is we've all got plenty to confess, an ongoing need for forgiveness. Fortunately, the well of God's grace and love is deep and full. It will never dry up. So tough though it is, emotionally demanding as it inevitably can be, confession is the necessary beginning to the possibility of new beginnings. It's where we have to start if we're intending to go down the road of self-knowledge and with it, inner healing. This is who I am. This is what I've done. These are the kinds of things I think. This is what I've failed to do. In some branches of the church, there's more to confession than simply some kind of inner dialogue with God. There's a place to go. There's a person to talk with. There's a precise process to go through. And there's something very focused about that approach. You can't avoid it. It's part of what is required in order to share in the sacrament. So that there's no debris of unfinished business cluttering up the experience of Holy Communion. We have to make a real connection between the state of our soul and the bread and wine we share in the intimacy of the Lord's table. The Apostle Paul requires us to examine ourselves before God. He recognises the need to clear the air, sweep away the pretences and the pretensions, and deal with the issues that clog up our soul, so that with a clean heart and an unburdened soul, we can let the bread and wine speak to our spirit. Taking confession as seriously as that, taking it beyond theory to personal action, indicates a willingness to accept the truth and bear the pain with humility. When the man or woman whose church tradition offers the option of confession, when they go into the confessional box and they kneel and share their need and their weakness with the priest, they are acknowledging, through their seriousness and earnest purpose, the reality of their human nature and its frailty. It's a brave thing to do, stripping back the veneer to face the facts of their fallenness. A much more common approach is to protest our innocence with passion, so much passion that we begin to believe it. I remember when I was a wee boy, I could have lied for Scotland. No, I did not break the precious China horse. No, it was not me who took the money from the telephone box. No, I did not forge that signature on my report card. And I would protest my innocence till the tears ran. Release and relief only came when I grew up enough to embrace my weaknesses and admit my mistakes and confess my sins. Ensnaring our personality in a web of self-deception, refusing to face the truth, is a ruinous choice. We read from John, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. The film Dead Man Walking is a powerful account of the true story of a man found guilty of murder who is visited by a nun as he waits on death row. And the hinge of the drama is the truth that until he faces and accepts the reality of what he's done, he will know only the anguish of a tortured soul. If he can accept the truth about what had happened, what he did, if he can confess the truth about what happened, then the truth will set him free, and he can have the chance to know what forgiveness means. But if he insists on locking it all away, if he digs the pit of denial deeper and deeper, there will be no liberty, no resolution, no peace in the inner man. To confess our sins before God is a tough and demanding experience. We're perhaps more ready to settle for the illusion of innocence than take the reality seriously. But the Bible makes it clear. The liturgy and practice of the church provides the vehicle. The quiet privacy of honest prayer gives us a tool. What is confession? Confession is the first step on the journey home to the God who waits and longs to forgive and to liberate us. The first step on the journey home.